The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Ken Follett. He joins us on the telephone somewhere in the United Kingdom. Welcome to the program, sir.
It's great to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Ken, where are you right now? What part of the country?
I'm at my country house, which is about 30 miles north of London, in a village called Nebworth, which is famous because sometimes in the park near my house they have rock concerts, and the Stones have played there, and Oasis and Pink Floyd played there. So that's the name. Although it's a tiny village, the name is quite familiar to a lot of people because of the legendary gigs there.
Well, I've heard of that venue, and yes,
yeah,
and
yeah.
So can you hear the music from your house?
Always, yeah. I don't really need to, you know, my neighbors are always very willing to give me free tickets, but I really don't need them because I could just sit in my garden and hear the music. Actually, I went to a gig on Saturday. The Kaiser Chiefs were playing, and it was a drive-in gig.
Oh.
So you can socially distance, you know. You drive in and you get a large parking space, and you can get a couple of lawn chairs out of the trunk of your car and sit in your parking space and without getting dangerously near anybody else. So it's a new way to listen to rock and roll. And so we heard the Kaiser Chiefs. It's great.
Ken, you have a new book out. It's called The Evening and the Morning. And this is a prequel to The Pillars of the Earth. It started in 1989, didn't it?
Yes, indeed, with a book called The Pillars of the Earth, which is a novel about the building of a cathedral in the Middle Ages. And somewhat to the surprise of my publishers, it was a huge success. It was more successful than any of my previous books. And we have now sold 26 million copies of The Pillars of the Earth around the world. It's kind of an astonishing number, isn't it? I can hardly believe it myself. 26 million books. Anyway, I wrote a sequel about the town of Kingsbridge at the time of the Black Death, which is the 14th century. The Black Death was a terrible plague, very, very like COVID-19, except worse. And I wrote about how the same town lived through that, how they coped with it, and how society was changed by this terrible plague. My last book, A Column of Fire, was also partly set in Kingsbridge and was about spies in the time of Queen Elizabeth I in the 16th century in England. And so it's become, you know, Kingsbridge has become kind of the star of these stories, and people are interested in Kingsbridge. And so I've now written a prequel to The Pillars of the Earth, which is about Kingsbridge before it became a big city, big important city, when it was really no more than a small village. And it's set at the time when the Vikings and the Normans and the Anglo-Saxons were competing for control of England. So it's a very dramatic moment in history. And that's The Evening and the Morning. It's called that because set around the year 1000, which was a kind of turning point in history. It's the end of the Dark Ages, which was a bad time, and the beginning of the Middle Ages, which was the sort of rebirth of European civilization. So that's The Evening and the Morning, The Evening of the Dark Ages and the Morning of the Rebirth.
It sounds like that third book in the series was sort of a return to the books that really got you noticed in the first place. Didn't you write spy thrillers?
Yes, I certainly did. My early books were all thrillers, and I read thrillers, and I love them. I still read thrillers. And I was, you're quite right, I was intrigued by the idea of spies in the time, you know, while Shakespeare was alive. This is the time of Queen Elizabeth I, Tudor England, when the theatre was just being invented. And at the same time, they invented the Secret Service, the English Secret Service. Queen Elizabeth invented the English Secret Service. And I just thought that combination was so intriguing, how spies managed, how they did their work, and how they managed secrecy, all at a time where electricity wasn't even thought of.
In case you're just tuning in, my guest is Ken Follett. His new book is The Evening and the Morning. Let's talk about this story. I have to tell you, I was hooked from the very first page. I could not put this book down. And you have three main protagonists, and they are Edgar, and correct me on the pronunciation, is it Ragna, and then Aldred. And they form sort of a triangle in a way in this story. And Edgar, I don't see how anyone could dislike him. What a guy. Tell us about Edgar.
Well, Edgar is what today we would call an early adopter. And Vic, I'm sure you know people, maybe you are one of the people, who always have the newest laptop and the latest iPhone, and they have all the newest apps. And we call them early adopters. And if Edgar were alive today, he would certainly have the very latest iPhone. He's a guy who always is interested in the new ways of doing things, the new techniques. He's a boat builder and a carpenter, and he eventually becomes a builder in stone as well. And so he's a kind of – I've written more than once, I've written about craftsmen, men who are very good with their hands and who can imagine something like a building, a church, or a ship in their heads and then go about building it. So that's Edgar, and he's also kind of, a lot of the time, he's the voice of sweet reason in this story. Mm. There are quite a lot of brutal people around. This is the Dark Ages, after all. There were brutal, cruel people and violent men. And Edgar is a kind of, as you say, a very likable sort of antidote to all that.
And you've mentioned the Vikings. And at this period of history, the Vikings had been terrorizing the coastline along there for hundreds of years. But this is kind of near the end of that period, according to my knowledge of history, probably the last...
That's true.
50 years or so of the Vikings. But Edgar has been terribly impacted by Viking violence. And then we have, across the water in France, in Normandy, we have a culture that has sprung from the Vikings, and that's where Ragna has originated. Tell us about her.
Well, she's the daughter of a Norman count, and as you correctly say, the Normans had once been Vikings, but they had been pretty comprehensively civilized by living in France. Happens to a lot of people. Living in France makes you more civilized. What they have now, when we get to the year 1000, is they have a very sophisticated civilization. They're ahead of other European nations in many ways. And Ragna is the daughter of a count, and her parents have lined up a guy for her to marry, and this guy is a cousin of the King of France, and they're very pleased about this. And Ragna says, Ragna takes one look at this guy, and she says, "You have to be kidding me. I'm not marrying him." And she's a determined young woman, and she will not succumb. She will not give in to pressure. And so she marries the guy she really likes, who is an Anglo-Saxon chieftain. And her adventure is that she comes to England, to live in England and be married to this guy. And she hasn't really found out enough about him before making this commitment. So she's going to run into some problems and some issues. It's a different country with different ways. The family that she's marrying into is not what she's expecting. And so she has to deal with all that. But she is smart and determined. And with her, and her father has taught her a lot about government and how it works, because he has asked her to deputize for him at things like courts, and so she is also, despite her youth, quite experienced, and she turns out to be a formidable opponent to some of the people in England who take against her.
And the third main character who I mentioned is Aldred, and he's a monk. And I will leave it for readers to discover his role, because he is so pivotal between all of these characters and all of these happenings. And you seem to have a point of convergence, and I would say that that is the river located at what they call Dreng's Ferry. And Dreng, what a character, what a villain. But at least he's nice to his daughter.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because I have noticed that some of the most horrible people I've ever met have been nice to their kids or nice to their pets sometimes as well. Human nature. The variety is endless.
True. You have some other villains in the story, and probably the most compelling one, I think, for readers, the most developed by far, much more developed than Dreng, who's just loathsome, is the bishop. And the bishop is the half-brother of the Anglo-Saxon noble who falls in love with Ragna. And his name, would you say it's Winston?
Yes, it is Winston. That's right. Yeah.
What a character. Whoa.
Well, he's certainly one of the most unpleasant people I've ever created. I think readers are going to hope that he will eventually come to a very unpleasant end. And I think we can, without giving too much away, we can say that they're not going to be disappointed.
I've got to give it to you, Ken. When we get to page 899 and we find out how Winston finally falls from grace, it's pretty impressive.
Good.
I could tell you had fun with that.
Yes. Yes, well, he needed an end that was, as it were, appropriate also to his sins. And that's what he got.
Yeah. Well, it made me really think about this culture, and I think we need to talk about the king, too. Is it Ethelred?
Yes, that's right. He's known in the history books as Ethelred the Unready, which is kind of it's an odd nickname, because the Anglo-Saxon word unread means ill-advised. It doesn't mean that he was always taken by surprise by events, and so it's a funny nickname. So in the book I've called him Ethelred the Misled, which is a much more accurate translation. Well, misled is a translation of the Anglo-Saxon word unread. Unready is not a translation of the Anglo-Saxon word unread. So he's Ethelred the Misled. But really, you know, when people say that a king or a prime minister is misled by his advisers, it's really a way of criticizing the king without criticizing the king, if you see what I mean.
Mm.
You say he's perfectly all right, he's a wonderful man, but he's got these awful advisers. And what you're really saying is that he's useless as a king, because anybody who has bad advisers and takes their advice is no good as a leader. But it's a little fudge if you want to criticize the king or the prime minister without seeming to do so. So he was a very competent king. What he was very good at was managing the currency, and that's important at this point. There's only one coin in use, and it's the silver penny. And maintaining the value of the silver penny is very important to the economy. And because you can't, where the currency keeps being deflated, it's very difficult to do business and it's very difficult to save and all that kind of thing. So this was a really important job that some kings did well and some badly at this point. He did it well, which is a big plus for him. He was not very good at defending England from the Vikings. Mind you, very few kings were. The Vikings were very strong militarily. So Ethelred was kind of a sort of average king, some good points and some bad.
It came as a bit of a surprise to me. I knew the Vikings were a slavery-based culture, and they took a lot of captives and turned them into slaves. I was not aware that at the end of the first millennium that there were still a lot of slaves in England. This was kind of a shock to me, and apparently your Welsh forebears were quite popular as slaves, and I think my favorite character in the book is a Welsh slave named Blodd.
Yes. Yes, she's a good character, isn't she? She's brutally treated, but she's never quite crushed. She always manages to retain a little bit of her spirit. And without giving too much away, she has a happy ending. I vaguely knew that there were slaves, but I didn't really know the extent of it. And once I discovered that, 10% of the population of England were slaves, 1 in 10 people, which is a huge thing. And it makes slavery definitely a front and center feature of the society that I'm writing about. So they had to be characters. You know, they can't be sort of non-persons. They've got to have personalities and names and destinies. And so the slaves are an important part of this story. English historians are a little bit inclined to play this down. They're a bit embarrassed. Huh. Who wouldn't be that slavery is part of our national story? But there it is, and I felt that it's an important part of the society. It's got to be an important part of the book. These things should not be dodged. They should be faced. The thing is, somebody in the story, I think it's Aldred in the story, says that owning people brings out the worst in human beings. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true. Although clearly there were some kind slave owners and some brutal slave owners, the tendency is for this practice of slavery to turn people into brutes. And I thought it was important to highlight the damage that is done to the owners as well as to the slaves, much worse for the slaves themselves, of course, but the owners are also damaged spiritually by slavery, I think. And I thought that was kind of an interesting part of the story.
Hmm. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, Building a More Informed Community with Independent News and Storytelling, and it's my absolute pleasure to have Ken Follett on the phone over in England. He's just published The Evening and the Morning. It's a prequel to The Pillars of the Earth. And we realized very quickly, number one, that you're giving us good value for our reading dollars. You don't write short books, do you? And number two, wow, we know this is a love story. We know it's going to be a love story early on, and we're hoping and we're wondering, and by golly, last page we say, what a love story.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you had that reaction, because I felt it was a moving story, and I've never quite done there's always a love story in my books, of course. And in this case, it was a love story which love story which takes quite a long time to reach its resolution, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The even more than usual, the two lovers face enormous obstacles before they can get together. And that, of course, is what love stories are all about. If two people fall in love and get married and live happily ever after, it's wonderful, but it's not a story.
Mm-hmm. So how do you do it, Ken? How do you write like this? What's your secret?
Well, I think the essential thing in novels is that the reader comes to share the emotions of the people in the story. So that when somebody's treated unjustly, the reader feels indignant. When there's danger, the reader gets goose pimples. When something good happens, the reader rejoices. It's the emotional reaction that we have to stories that makes us turn the page. And as we know, if the author can get you to turn the page, then he's got you or she's got you. And so for me, I think the key factor is that emotional reaction. If the reader has that consistently through the book, different emotional reactions, then the reader will love the story. And if not, then the book may be clever, it may be very well written, it may be funny, it may be informative, but it probably won't be a bestseller, because that is the magic. That is the magic of literature, that we read a story which we know has been made up, and yet we have all these feelings about it. I think that's what we enjoy. That's what we're looking for. Walking around the bookstore, picking up this book and that book, looking at the cover, reading the back, maybe opening it and reading a few lines inside. That's the experience we're hoping for. We want a book that will make us feel for the characters and share their hopes and fears.
There's a scene in the story in which Dreng does something so horrid that I don't think that a reader can get to that piece of the book and not stop and say, this is the most compelling, most horrid thing I've ever heard in my life. But you just have to keep reading because you want Dreng to somehow get paid back for his act of violence.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And, of course, as a reader myself, I don't like too much violence and brutality in a book. A certain amount is important because it sets up what the issues are. And you don't really understand how cruel Dreng is and how heartless he is about other people until the scene that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, I find as a reader, and I'm sure many other readers feel this, that a little of that goes a long way. Uh-huh. You don't want to be reading chapter after chapter about bad things happening. What happens in a novel is that bad things happen or are threatened, and the characters that we like struggle against them. They meet challenges. They take risks. They help others. And one way or another, people come out towards the end of the book. People come out with some resolution. They've at least partly solved their problems. They have triumphed over one or two malicious characters. They haven't turned the world into a happy paradise, but they've made a little progress in that direction. And so we need the problems, we need the oppression and the cruelty. We need a limited amount of it, but what we really want to see is the human spirit fighting against this stuff. For me, that's one of the pleasures of the novel, to see human beings fighting against repression and brutality.
So true. My guest is Ken Follett. His new book is The Evening and the Morning. He joins us on the telephone in England today. And Ken, you mentioned earlier that you enjoy reading thrillers. Who are some of the writers that you enjoy?
Oh, well, I just discovered a writer called George Pelicanos. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
Oh, yeah.
I realize I'm coming very late to this all. I realize everybody else has been reading him for decades.
Mm.
But he's new to me, and I just read them. The Man Who Came Uptown, and I've been blown away by it. I enjoyed it very much.
George is fabulous. He's been on the show a number of times, and you know he does a lot.
Great.
He does a lot of TV writing. He wrote The Wire with David Simon. That's one of his.
Oh really? Do you know? I did not know that detail.
Yeah.
That was an incredible show, The Wire. Mm-hmm. Gosh.
Yep.
But you know, here in England, we watched it with subtitles.
Uh huh. so you can understand
it? We couldn't understand what people were saying. Everybody in England, it's very popular here. It's very popular. Uh-huh. People love that show. But yeah, everybody watched it with subtitles. Anyway, I didn't realize. Well, of course, now that you've told me that, of course, I can see it, the wit in the dialogue and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that now. Yeah. Thank you for that little fun fact.
Well, I'm delighted to know that you've discovered George. He doesn't put out very many books, so they're all little jewels. Ken, what's your idea of a perfect day? What do you do for fun? What do you do for relaxation?
One of my favorite things to do is I play the bass guitar, and I love to play in a band. Of course, with the isolation and this darn virus, I haven't got together with any of my fellow band members since March. In fact, the last social occasion I went to before lockdown was a gig at which the band played, and so I'm really looking forward to being able to do that again. I love the music. I like the camaraderie. I like the challenge of playing well and listening to everybody else in the band at the same time and making sure that, you know, that what I'm playing is good with what the lead guitarist is doing and all that kind of thing. It's a great pleasure. I hasten to add that I'm not a virtuoso. I'm an adequate bass player and proud to be adequate. but that is definitely one of my favorite things to do, and I'm really looking forward to when we have the vaccine for this darn virus and we can all go back to doing normal things that we love.
Well, Ken, I really appreciate that you took the time to be my guest today on the program.
Well, thank you, Vic. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I hope we can do it again one day.
Well, you just need to write another wonderful book like this one, The Evening and the Morning, and I'd be happy to have you back again.
Well, bless you. I'll do my best.
My guest has been Ken Follett. His book is The Evening and the Morning. It's a prequel to The Pillars of the Earth. You heard about it on The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. And Ken, I hope you get out there with your bass guitar very soon.
Thank you, Vic. Pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.